Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of CameraDojo.com, where we help you make the most out of your photography. This is your host, Carrie Garrison, and with me, like most always anyway, almost all the time, David Esquire. How you doing, David?
Doing fabulous, Carrie. How about yourself?
You know, I'm a little tired still. We had WPPI, then we come back, we do a handful of shoots, and I'm turning around and leaving again tomorrow for PMA. I'm going to be out there for a few days, and then I come back for one day, and I turn around, I go to New York, and then I'm back hopefully for a while. So I'm like running a little thin.
Oh, gosh, let me go get that bottle of Merlot to go with that wine.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's just been crazy. It's a crazy time of year. And we've been doing bridal shows. We've been doing shoots together. We've been doing video projects. So we've been busy.
Yeah, I don't recall the last time we actually have had an opportunity to stop. I mean, we have been charging. And it's not even like we're bragging about it. It's literally to the point where it's like, no, I'm ready for some time off. I'm ready for a day off. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to the trip to New York because I know that's like 6 hours of sleep. that'll be good for me. But we were at WPPI and yes. We had a great time. That we met a lot of new people, hooked up with a lot of existing friends, made new contacts, met some cool vendors out there. There's some really neat things going on. If you have not gone to Camera Dojo, .com, get over there and watch. There's five different videos that we did while we were out there with all kinds of really cool vendors and some really interesting things like a portrait project.
Yeah, with Christy Blake and Christine Bentley. I'm really impressed and really just amazed at how fast that particular program has blown up that they're working on. And just it's an honor to be able to just call them a friend of mine and to support what they're doing.
Yeah, I was blessed to meet them and find out what they were up to and become friends with them while we were out there. And I mean, I certainly signed up for that. I mean, this is kind of like Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. It's a foundation. And the difference being they do photographs for women and families who have been abused. And so it's a way that the people can restart their lives, because a lot of times in those relationships, the guy destroys their images, trying to kind of destroy their identity. And so this is a way of starting to rebuild it. I think it's a wonderful foundation to be involved with. And I highly recommend everyone go and check it out.
Absolutely.
What were a couple of your highlights out there?
The Pictage party was pretty intense. Really had a great time there. The Gobi bag/ photography mentor, their annual party, that was pretty good. Let's see here, what were some of the other ones? No, it was just amazing for me to be able to meet Parker Pfister. That was a huge highlight for me. He was a very big inspiration for me a few years ago when I needed that whole jump start to get over some personal speed bumps that we had to deal with. And it was awesome, you know, to be able to meet him, sit down, listen to his program, really get to watch Dane's program develop a little bit more with Fast Track Photographer and his presentation, and seeing how it's just maturing and the response and the need and the wants are being filled right there with Dane with the Fast Track Photographer program. That is super cool to see that.
What about some of your favorite vendors?
Oh, gosh. Let's see here. Obviously, Ron over at the R-Strap. That's so cool. Got to bump into Mike Larson picking up his strap when we were there. That was neat. Jenny over at Triple Scoop Music. I'm such a huge fan of that because I know what it's like to have my work stolen. So why in the world would I want to steal somebody else's music and use it on my website? So the people over at Triple Scoop, they've got music that's, you know, and it's, I don't want to say copyright free, but it's royalty free. They've already purchased the rights to it and purchased the rights to be able to let photographers use their music without worry of like the RIAA coming down and shutting you down and, you know, fining you for tens of thousands of dollars or turning off your business for the, you know, that matter. And then some of the really cool albums that we saw that we didn't go back to get.
There was a ton of new albums, but there was one new product out there that you kept going back to several times, and that was Crop Lines.
Oh, I know. Oh my gosh. And we've already had a couple of emails, and I'm a little hesitant to get my 40s done because I'm like, am I going to get a 5D Mark II? I don't know. I'm saving. I don't know. But that is a sick product. And I thought it was just really neat because you can have your sensor custom, not your sensor, but your
focus screen.
Yeah, the focus screen. I was going to say the mirror. The focus screen inside your camera, it'll have customized crop lines to meet your particular needs. So if you shoot mostly 8x10 or 5x7 or 4x6s or portraits, you're doing high school portraits and you're shooting in the same spot all the time, you can have these particular crop lines on the focus screen etched on it. And that's a permanent replacement. Well, not 100% permanent. It can be swapped out if you needed to change it, but they don't recommend it. So in a sense, it is kind of sort of permanent. But that is so cool.
Yeah, that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
For studio school yearbook things where you want that consistency time and time and time again, things like that, it's fantastic for. So, and always making sure that you've got your 8x10 crops in there. I mean, it definitely has its uses. There were some cool stuff there. I think my highlight was David Zeiser. I'm a huge fan of his. I love the way he does lighting, and we sat through his two-hour presentation, which is kind of the warm-up to his digital wake-up call tour that's coming this spring. That is going to be really huge, but I'm going to tell you guys something right now. Do not sign up for his seminar. Do not sign up for it, because there will be a Camera Dojo discount code coming soon, and when we have that, we'll announce it. And there's some pretty cool things that happen behind the scenes based on how many people sign up from Camera Dojo. So please hold off on signing up for David Zeiser's talk, because I want to get you guys the Camera Dojo discount code and have you sign up that way. But this is going to be a not-to-miss seminar in your area. It's going to be fantastic. God, a bunch of things. I think we highlighted in the videos all the ones that we thought were really cool that we had a chance to go to. There were others, but Studio Taxi, Innovatronics, all the new stuff with Pictage. The stuff with Pictage is really cool. The new Pictage Lite, the Pictage Upload tool, the new slideshow tool. There's a bunch of really neat things. And coming, you're going to be catching this show on Tuesday, which will be the first day of PMA. And so probably the day after you get this podcast, you'll start seeing things from PMA. And there's rumors that there's some new cameras coming.
Yeah.
We know there's some power shots and things like that, but there are definitely some DSLR rumors. So
yeah,
we'll have to see how that goes. And
interesting. Exciting.
Also, right now, again, from my good friend Max over at borrowlenses.com, I am playing with a 50D. You guys heard us talk about the 5D Mark II. I did the article on it. Phenomenal camera. That was a phenomenal camera. But it is out of the price point for a lot of people. When the 50D is a step up from the 40D, it's kind of been... what's the way to put it? Lost in the limelight?
Yep.
You know, the 5D Mark II has got all the hype. It's got all all the buzz, because yep, it's got the high ISO and it's got video and it's got the Digic 4 and it's got all these great things. Well, the 50D has really good ISO. It has the Digic 4. It doesn't have video, but it does a lot of really neat things. And you and I were out shooting yesterday, playing around with this thing, and it's pretty sick.
I was impressed. I was really impressed with the ISO on it, because we were doing quite a bit of nighttime shooting at one of the properties yesterday, and it was impressive. You know, you were at 3,200, which looked like 800 on my 40.
It's impressive. So I'm taking it out. I've got a couple more photo shoots I'm going to do before I wrap up the article on this. The new Lens Babies promotion. Can't forget to mention that. If you buy a Lens Baby Composer, you can get a wide angle and macro conversion lens for your Composer for free. And you can get that whether you buy it from Lens Baby or you buy it from another retailer. You can go to the page that's on Camera Dojo, find the article on it. It's also in the show notes, and it's also in the commercial break that we're going to have. So stay tuned and make sure you find out how to get that free 0.6 wide angle macro lens for free for your Lens Baby Composer. Okay, that's all the updates I think we need to get out for the time being, because we have yet again another hour-long podcast. And this one is with Tom Hogarty, the product manager for Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. I guess I'll keep talking.
To say, and
all yes, right, that's I threw it out there, and you didn't catch it. So I'll keep
going. I was listening to you. I was like, all right, he's going. So
Tom is coming on, and one of the things that we wanted to get from him was, what is the best way for people to use Lightroom in terms of organizing images? Should you use multiple catalogs, or you should use one catalog with multiple collections? And so we posed that to Tom, and well, you're gonna have to just listen to the interview to so you'll have to listen to the conversation with Tom to see how that goes. And let's go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll be back with Tom Hogarty. We're here with Tom Hogarty, the product manager, and I'm going to say the whole name this time because I'm not going to say the whole thing later on, Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
Glad you could make the time to come on and talk to us and our listeners and tell us some cool things that are going on with Lightroom. And I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to say, oh, I can't answer that right now because you don't talk about features that aren't out yet, but I'm going to, you know, it's my job, right?
Fire away, and you'll hear my stock response. But I just file them under the things of the requests that we always have coming in from photographers. So I like to hear them.
I know most of our listeners and readers know what Lightroom is, but for those, you know, two people who have been living under a rock, give us the elevator pitch of what Lightroom is, and then we'll get right into it.
That's a good question, because, you know, Lightroom is a little bit different than traditional image editors, so you do kind of need a quick 30-second pitch on what it is and how it's different. And it's just like having kind of a digital assistant to take away all the administrative responsibilities a digital photographer has these days, combined with a digital darkroom that's just completely redesigned from the ground up for just really nice non-destructive editing capabilities. And that non-destructive word might be overused a bit, but what it means is there's no fear. You can edit to your heart's content. You don't have to worry about doing it in the wrong order or, you know, mushing pixels, the traditional Photoshop paradigm. So it's really getting away the administrative responsibilities and freeing photographers to edit their images and kind of get the most out of their images.
For people who were trying to use RAW, let's say 2.5-3 years ago, when RAW stood for really awful workflow, it was difficult. I mean, and using Photoshop was kind of painful because the camera RAW didn't support multiple images, and it really was a nightmare to use. And I remember this little program called RAW Workflow, which was just the saving grace of RAW workflow products. And then mysteriously it disappeared. And shortly after, there was this beta of this cool product called Lightroom, which just has revolutionized the way photographers work with images.
Yeah. I was going to go back a bit further than 3 years. I started working with RAW formats around the time of the DCS Pro back from Kodak. And, I guess that's 8 or 9 years ago. And the number of applications we had to cobble together just to get something put up on the web for a client or contact sheets printed and then have your images stored in a logical manner, maybe renamed with a separate utility, it was close to a dozen. And so to be able to have all that functionality in a single application that kind of remembers what you need when you need it, I'm going to say it is pretty nice.
An important point is that Lightroom is non-destructive editing.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned that a little bit. We could go further. I mean, Photoshop is non-destructive editing, and the way that you do that is you create another layer or you save as version 3, and you didn't destroy anything. You can always go back to it. You can go back to that other layer You know, they have new things like smart filters. But this is an entirely new, you know, design where we don't even touch the original file. We just read from it and do all of the adjustments in memory. So that's completely undoable. And you get back to any point in the history. I talked to a lot of Photoshop customers who were, you know, who are like, tell me the right way in the specific order in which I want to apply a, you know, tone curve mask to a certain portion of an image and then resize for web. And, you know, what's the exact precise order to maximize image quality? And the nice thing about Lightroom is it doesn't matter. Just edit your image in whichever order you feel, you know, comfortable with. Maybe convert to black and white first and then go in and do a tone curve adjustment. It really doesn't matter. And I think that's freed up a lot of that fear.
Yeah, and I would say that with Lightroom 1, a lot of us were saying, well, I now do 75% of my work in Lightroom and then the other 25 in Photoshop. But with Lightroom 2 and the local adjustment brush and camera profiles and all the new things, I know that there's been wedding shoots where I've never gone into Photoshop at all. And David, you'd concur with that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Like Young, you were just mentioning about having to just pretty much cobble together all these different applications. And when Lightroom was first coming out and we were tinkering with it, at that point I had an Excel spreadsheet with about 12 to 13 different steps of different things that I was doing. And that was just strictly in Photoshop. And again, it was all destructive editing and just doing all the different layers. And now with Lightroom, oh my gosh, it has made so many changes to where pretty much the only thing I may use Photoshop for now would be some of the different textures, things like that. But I'm not doing a whole lot of texture. So I would say about 98 to 99% of my editing now is handled completely in Lightroom. And it's great. And I love the post-cropping vignetting. That is beautiful.
Yeah, I was sorry we didn't get that in the first version, but we heard the request loud and clear through those public betas, so we definitely needed to get it in for Lightroom 2.
Definitely a lot of cool things made it into Lightroom 2. The local adjustment brush is, I mean, it's almost a godsend. I mean, for to be able to paint things in and you know, exposure or paint in some saturation. The only thing that's really missing from there is the ability to paint in fill flash. Is that something you guys have thought of?
Well, you can, you know, if you paint in a little extra brightness, you're essentially doing the same effect. But we actually haven't added the control for specific fill flash. I mean, we're hoping that the kind of the fill utility that's global is smart enough to pick the you know, the shadows that you want to brighten up a little bit and do that without actually needing to go in and specify those areas with the brush.
You can usually get there. There's just some little nuances between the different tools that, you know, I mean, if I gave you a list of everything I'd like to see, which I think you probably have because one of my good friends is Rick Miller. So I feed him, you know, issues all the time and he's like, okay, I'll send that one up the chain. And
definitely,
you know, cause I love Lightroom, but there's certainly some things I would really love to see in it. And we'll get to those. But one thing that our readers and listeners are always asking us is what's better? Should they use one big catalog or should they use multiple catalogs for each shoot? And is there pros and cons to each one?
You know, that is a good question. I've talked to a lot of photographers about that recently. I lean towards one catalog because I don't want to deal with catalogs floating around in different places. And, you know, I wouldn't have said that 2 years ago. I think Lightroom 1.0, unless you had really advanced hardware, if you got beyond 50 or 60,000 images, that one catalog's going to bog down. With 2.0 and 2.2, which is now out, I don't think that's really an issue. And I would rather just keep everything in one place and not have to worry about launching different catalogs.
I know for myself, I was going to, and I haven't, I was going to split 2008 into its own catalog and 2009 into a catalog, just simply so that when I'm searching, I'm searching on more current things when I'm trying to build a sample album or something and kind of eliminating the older ones. But I haven't done it because I still go back to some of them because I've got some really good pictures from 2008 that, you know, I'm still using for different things. So I'm of the mindset that you should have one big catalog and then really use collections to your advantage.
Yeah, I agree with that. Collections are probably one of the more powerful tools to kind of group a set of images and keep that group without interfering with how you organize images on your hard drive. Now, I will make one exception to the multiple catalogs. I'll tell you a little bit of a tip about my workflow, and I know folks who have multiple computers do this quite a bit. When I'm out with my camera and a laptop, I typically have just a working catalog on my laptop, and it's real sparse. I try and just clean it out and only have one kind of project at a time, and I work on it when I'm kind of out and about, and I travel quite a bit, so I finish working with those images, and I try and do the first pass edit, do all the collection work, and then when I get back to the office of my house, I then import it into the larger catalog and get rid of that working catalog. So it gets me the ability to do all this work on the road, you know, and get a lot done, and then when I get back to the office, I can just pull it right into my larger library.
Coming through a list of Twitter questions here, Jeff Sepper asks, is there a way to take... because he was using multiple catalogs. Is there an easy way to combine those into one big catalog now?
Oh, absolutely. Now, we don't have utility to just say select all these catalogs and merge them, but typically you kind of pick your biggest catalog, and then you just click on the file menu and just import from catalog, and you just kind of pick off one catalog at a time. It's not designed to ingest quite a few at a time, but you can get one at a time, and I think it's pretty handy.
And that should solve his problem with trying
to... Nice thing is if you may accidentally had multiple files or a single file in different catalogs, we'll reconcile that for you on the way in.
Oh, that's good. So you don't have to worry about duplicates coming in.
Absolutely.
Does that work the same as when you're doing an import and something's already in the library?
Import's a little bit more aggressive than just saying, you know what, we're not going to take that file because it's already here. When you're importing from another catalog, we actually look and see, well, are they exactly the same? Do they have the exact same edits? Has this one been edited more recently? Should we say, pick this one? Or do we say, you know what, keep both iterations and make one a virtual copy? So there's a lot more flexibility, actually, in the import from catalog in terms of managing when you do updates on the road. Because, you know, I talked about that working catalog in the laptop. A lot of photographers have their portfolio catalog, and it's just a subset of their favorite images. Maybe they're doing some tweaking on the plane or something, and they want to bring it back into their larger library. They can do that, and they can control, you know, which is the latest edit, which one do I want to stick with.
David, were you trying to get a word in there?
Yeah, definitely. That's actually kind of what I do with my notebook, is that because I take that on the road with me extensively, that I'll create one large catalog with multiple images, and it's nice because I can bring things in and out of it all the time and work with it, and I love that, and just the full control of that catalog. And then just wanted to share, like, my experience where, and Carrie and I, we've talked about this before, where I don't keep all of my catalogs. I basically, I'm done with it, and it sounds really bad, but I just dump it, and I keep only my working projects in my primary computer when I'm working on them. I don't want to put myself into a position where I need to go back. For some people, that's cool. For some people, that, you know, may not be what they want to do. But it's interesting because Carrie and I, you know, we'll sit down and he'll look at my catalog and be like, where is everything? It's like, it's gone. It's done. It's been finalized. It's been delivered. I don't want to look at it. I don't plan on going back to it.
That's interesting. I'm curious, before you throw out the catalog, do you save your metadata out to the files themselves?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
okay, that's one last tip. I you know, it's not turned on by default, but there's two ways to do this. One is to just hit Command-S, and that will save all your adjustments and all the metadata and IPTC and keywords right back out to the file system. And that's really important because, you know, a lot of us have been doing digital photography for a while. We've tried different applications, and you put a lot of time and effort into managing and organizing your images, and then all of a sudden something better comes along, and all that effort you put into the previous application is locked into it.
Yeah.
your keywords, your tagging, things like that. And with Lightroom, what we try to do is make it really extensible. So, sure, you've got all the benefits of that information living in a catalog, but if you need to push it out and have it live with the files so that in, you know, 20, 30 years, if you're not using Lightroom and you want to look up an image that has a certain keyword associated with it, you know, that keyword lives with the image itself, not just a catalog file.
When I've been talking to people who are trying to, you know, optimize their use of Lightroom with catalogs and collections, the one thing I find that very, very, very few people are using is Smart Collections. And that is a powerful tool, but I just don't see people really using it to its a full advantage. Do you think it may be too difficult or just people don't understand the concept?
Well, I think once someone tries it once, they see the power and they'll get on board. That's why we try to include a few sample smart collections to get people started in that area. It's still a new feature. You know, we're still reaching out to photographers and talking to them about their experience with this version. And if we haven't, you know, if we haven't implemented the feature in a way that makes sense or is easy to use or easy to adopt, I mean, especially given its power, then we've done something wrong. And we've done this before where we went back to the drawing boards on the library itself and said, you know, there's some confusion around where things are stored and how things are laid out. Let's fix it instead of just piling on new features to the existing interface.
Right, because as I was saying, my original goal was I was going to have catalogs for each year just to try and keep things organized. And then I realized, well, why am I doing that? I can just quickly tag everything from 2008 with the text 2008 and create a smart catalog for it, and I'm done. And then I have that, plus my fives, plus my reds, plus my whatever, and I can very quickly narrow down to a set of images that I like to use for my website, for my sample albums, and things like that without ever having to open up another catalog. And that's really where the power of these smart collections comes in, is being able to pull things from other shoots based on keywords, metadata, you know, text strings, whatever, and how you rated them and everything else all into a single collection automatically.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's a ton of power there. I even go further. The metadata filters up at the top of the library have a really great display for showing you different dates and different years automatically just by the capture time of the file. And I used to religiously organize all my images by year, month, day in the folder system on all my hard drives. And I realized, you know, that's no longer necessary. It's redundant because Lightroom is going to provide all of that structure for me. Why don't I organize my images on my hard drive and something that makes a little bit more sense when I look at it, which is by project or by job. And, you know, you couldn't do that before because it was a little bit, you know, it could get out of sync and which day was that job. And it's just an interesting mind shift for me in terms of how I organize my files on disk.
We've talked about this in previous shows about how we organize our files, and David and I are almost exact in that we have the folder named the date dash project name and sometimes, you know, extra information depending on what it is. I have repeating customers, so I have their customer name and then that project name. And within Lightroom, I see those same folders. I know exactly what I'm looking at. It helps to, for my mind, to sync up between the two and quickly find something when I know that I should just be using the search tools because they work so well. And I find myself not doing it as often as I should just because I'm still coming from this old school mentality of the file system and not using Lightroom to its full advantage.
Well, you know, that's not to say that you just want to take every image you have and dump it in a single folder and let Lightroom do the rest. I do think it's important for, you know, photographers to think a little bit before they get started about how they want to manage their images on disk. And, you know, it sounds like you guys have covered this topic. It sounds like you have a perfectly valid way of just doing a good, solid disk drive organization as a foundation to Lightroom instead of letting an application kind of decide those things for you.
Right. And because I know with the import, I copy them over, I import them in, I do everything, and it just, everything works so smooth. And the new versions are so much faster now. 2.2 is just way faster than the I think we were on 1.4 for the longest time. So it's definitely, you know, smoothed the process considerably with how well the system is working on modern hardware. 1.4 was great, but 2.2, it rocks.
Yeah, I got to say, we hear two things from photographers all the time. Make it faster and make the, you know, improve the image quality. So those are kind of two underlying themes we really focus on.
I would say another thing that very few people really know about is the camera profiles, because for the last few months or so, we had to use the beta profiles. You had to install them separately. And I know I jumped on it right away and I did an article and I had presets to help people, and people were like, oh, wow, what a difference. And now with the 2.2 upgrade, those profiles come standard with the upgrade, so you don't have to install it separately. And that is a huge tool for people. I know I shoot Canon, and I've always been disappointed in the reds. I'll take a picture of a Ferrari, and I'm like, I don't remember Ferraris being kind of orange. And
yeah,
with the profiles, it fixes it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about profiles is that there is no one-size-fits-all. You know, our perception of color and the scene, you know, is such a subjective thing. And a lot of times it's the back of the camera that kind of is our anchor image for how, you know, how the scene looked when we shot it. So, you know, really the idea of the profiles, you hit the nail on the head, is to give different interpretations of the scene that are going to match, you know, where a photographer wants to start working from. The analogy I always use is, you know, if the black and white negative, you can give it to 10 different custom print labs, and you're going to get 10 different prints of that negative. Not to say that anyone is right or wrong, but eventually you want that flexibility and say, well, I like this printer the best. I'm going to use them going forward, and just set that up as a default.
Right. I definitely use the camera standard preset when I import, just because I know my reds are going to be off if I don't, and it gives me a great starting point to go from there and then do the rest of my presets or adjustments and kind of fine tune it. And that was a big issue for a lot of people before, is they would, when they would import their RAWs, they'd get this beautiful image up front and then all of a sudden flap and would switch over to something that was a lot more dull, and they weren't realizing they were seeing that JPEG preview that had all the camera based settings applied to that JPEG, and then it was giving them the raw image for them to start working with, and they're like, but I want to start there. And that's kind of where these profiles really came into being, right?
Yep. No, absolutely. That little flip when it goes from that pop, contrasty, saturated, you know, first look, which is what they see in the back of the camera, to a, you know, very neutral, flat, kind of, this is where you're going to build from. That was frustrating for a lot of folks. I'm glad we could add that capability.
Is there some other really cool new thing that's in 2.2 that would make people want to upgrade from the 1.0 version? We talked about the adjustment brush. We talked about the profiles and.
Well, you know what? A lot of people don't realize because it's fairly subtle, but we added this sharpening capability. You know, there's really three different kinds of sharpening. There's capture sharpening, which compensates for just the digital capture process. There's creative sharpening, where you go in, you want to make the eyes pop, but nowhere else. And then there's output sharpening, which is, you know, correcting for whatever softening happens when you go to an output medium. So taking a 23-megapixel camera file and shrinking it down to, you know, 600 pixels wide for a web display, it's going to get soft. And taking an image and printing it out on an inkjet printer, there's a certain loss of sharpness. So a lot of people in the past have gone in and hand-tweaked the sharpness to look really sharp on screen, and then they'll say, okay, that looks bad on screen, so it's going to look good on my print. So what we've done is we actually acquired some technology from a company called Pixel Genius. They sell this PhotoKit sharpener plugin for $99.
Yeah, the sharpening is definitely fantastic. And with the newer version, you have this detail window, which will give you a one-to-one close-up of what you're working on, so you can really see the difference. because when you're looking at it kind of full screen, you don't see what Lightroom is going to do until you zoom in to 100%. So that little preview window in the sharpening, in the, well, it's in the details section, and is really valuable for showing the effects of sharpening and noise reduction.
Yeah, we had a lot of requests for that window, so people could kind of keep their eye on the whole image, but then see the impact on that little detail screen.
Now, as good as sharpening is, and I got to admit, it is much better than it used to be. I can only hope and pray that you can do some things with the noise reduction soon.
What kind of things with noise reduction would you like to see?
Well, it better. You know, it does a good job, but there's, especially when we're working with really high ISO images, that it Lightroom seems to hit a wall at some point, and then you have to go outside to something like Noise Ninja or Neat Image to really take it to the next level. And right now, plugins can't really use the rendering engine of Lightroom and work as a regular plugin like they do in Photoshop. You kind of have to go outside to an external editor, or it has to fire up Photoshop or something to do something, and then comes back into Lightroom. So that, since we don't really have clean integration of other tools, and the Lightroom one isn't quite there, that's the only kind of frustrating point, is when you're really dealing with the high ISO noise problems, it just doesn't seem to quite get you to where you want to be, only in the, you know, extreme cases, I might add.
Well, no, I would agree. I think we have some room for improvement on our noise reduction. And this really has been the year of, last year, we're already in 2009, but 2008 really was the year of, dealing with high ISOs. The new Nikon cameras and the improvements in the Canon line were extremely exciting. So it's kind of pushing the software side to keep up and make sure we can, handle those high ISO captures.
Yeah, that's kind of, I see that as being an evolutionary process, is trying to stay up with that technology. But at the same time, Lightroom has become such a valuable tool for photographers. And now with these new cameras, the D90, the 5D Mark II, now we're introducing the aspect of video into a photographer's workflow. And there really is no tool for that. I can only imagine that has been gone around in conversations as to, is Lightroom going to be a tool to allow photographers that ability, or is that just something that you'll never do because you have tools like Premiere?
Well, there are dedicated video tools that will always do a better job of pure video editing, like Premiere Pro and Premiere Elements. We're definitely looking at this area closely, because with the introduction of the video capture in the DSLRs, we have to address it. It's becoming part of a serious photographer's experience. It's just a matter of how far do we extend the application to address different types of workflows. That's something that Photoshop itself has always had to deal with. It's what customers are they serving? Are they serving photographers, graphic artists, illustrators, designers, architects, engineers? So Photoshop has so many constituents. Some might say it loses a little bit of focus in that power and flexibility. And so what we want to do with Lightroom, we want to keep it we want to keep it focused on the photography segment and keep it really beneficial to the things that photographers need. And video is becoming one of those things. So we'll just have to see how we can balance those out in the future.
Right, but I don't see most of us anyway as photographers that want to, say, video a wedding and then try and edit it in a tool like Lightroom. That's just not the right tool for it. You need a video editor for that. But for simple, I want to move my beginning point, crop my end point, and use that as part of my slideshow that I'm presenting, that seems like a reasonable way of adding to that workflow.
And how far do we stretch that out? I'm still, I always look to photojournalists because they're always really at the cutting edge of having to deal with first digital, just because of the time constraints on a photojournalist's work. And then, you know, they all started having to carry video cameras around some time ago because their media outlets expected both still and video coverage of an event. So kind of you can kind of see the future by looking at photojournalists and how they deal with multimedia.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, we're getting a bunch of questions in here, and most of them are feature things, which where should people go to send your request? Because I could go through all of these, but I know you have a link that they can just go and make feature requests directly on the Adobe website.
Yeah, there's a feature request form on the Adobe website. I wish it had a simple URL with all these things.
I'll put it in the show notes.
All right, great. Then we can get set that up afterwards.
Okay. So if you're wondering
every
where
single
to do
one
it,
of those, sorry, every single one of those requests hits my inbox, so it does get read.
Yeah, I mean, because just to kind of go through them here, people want tethered shooting. I know that's been a big request. Improved watermarking. Well, actually, watermarking that works. You know, the existing watermarking not so good. I know one that I wanted was the ability to have programming ability within a preset, so I could look and see, you know, be able to call some API to figure out how much of the image is blown out, so I can determine how much recovery I want to try and use, and be able to do some programmatic changes. So based on what is happening in the image itself, I think that would be kind of cool. That would really take presets to another level.
That's a very interesting suggestion.
And most of Lightroom is written in Lua, and Lua is a very easy programming language to get started with. A lot of Photoshop plugins are written in Lua, so that would be a good suggestion, don't you think?
That's an excellent suggestion.
Let's see if there's anything else. Oh, soft proofing and output to books, wedding books, and photo albums. I know that's one thing that a lot of people hold over Lightroom as being a really key feature of Aperture, and yet Aperture doesn't have a lot of the things that Lightroom has. But being able to output directly to these album companies and do album design within Lightroom, do you think that's straying too far away from kind of the goal of what Lightroom is?
No, I think if it's something that photographers do on a regular basis, then yes, then it is appropriate. You know, one of the things that we have to be careful of is, you know, Adobe, a software manufacturer that pretty much, you know, has a reputation in the print and publishing industry as, you know, unmatched. We do have to be careful. We have to take these kinds of topics like books very seriously. The quality levels that are expected from our customers, you know, they can't be the consumer consumer style books that you would get from like an iPhoto or, you know, Photoshop Elements. We really have to take it up a notch, because these are things that professionals rely on for their business.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's an excellent point. And, you know, it is what one segment of photographers do. I mean, landscape photographers may not use it, and sports photographers may not use it, but wedding photographers, you know, they certainly do a lot of album design. And so I can see really trying to balance that out in who are the big markets that you really need to, you know, cater to is probably a difficult decision all the time.
We definitely have to make a lot of difficult decisions. That's very true.
Yeah, I think one of the smart decisions that you guys did over there with Lightroom was adding the plugin for Pictage, where we can automatically take our photos from Lightroom right into Pictage. I think that's brilliant. I think that's become a huge time saver for a lot of people that do use Pictage, like myself. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, the beauty of that is all we needed to do was build the infrastructure. Then all of these plugins just get created by the community. That's the beauty of being able to kind of create that extensibility, is that all we have to do is set it up, and then we find that the rest of the industry kind of knocks it out of the park for us. It's really great. And you know, it's probably worth mentioning, we definitely are focused on plugins that extend the workflow, like that kind of connection to Pictage or other sites, metadata plugins for geotagging, that kind of stuff. Those are really important to us.
What you really can't do, and this is an architecture issue within Lightroom, is you can't have a plugin that affects the image directly within Lightroom today. Say you wanted to add a, like, On One. They have some good plugins that are
Lightroom compatible, but it usually means that they fire off an instance of Photoshop to do the rendering, and then they bring that image back into Lightroom because they can't, they don't have access to Lightroom's rendering engine today. Is, you know, is that something that you're getting a lot of requests for and that we may see change in future versions?
It is, but one of our concerns is breaking the non-destructive workflow and, you know, allowing third-party developers to insert their code kind of into our rendering, we call a pipeline or engine. You know, it's a very, very finely tuned engine, and you know, we have to proceed with caution because, you know, one of the things we have to do is consider, you know, how people's files are going to look, not just tomorrow, but 10 years from now. Camera Raw plugin has been around for a long time, and you know that if you open a file in Camera Raw 5 today or Lightroom 2 today, it's going to look the same as it did when the first Camera Raw plugin was introduced around Photoshop 7. So we have a lot of things we need to balance, and we definitely talk to all those developer companies, On1, Nix Software, so we stay in close contact.
Now, one thing that I see a couple people have asked a lot about is virtual copies. And I, from what I'm seeing in these questions, people aren't really understanding why you would use virtual copies. And this is one of those reasons, is if you want to make changes to an image but you don't want to affect the first one, using a virtual copy is a great way because you're not making a complete copy of the original image. You're not creating another RAW file, but you're able to assign presets and things to a virtual copy. That's what it is. Can you expand on what virtual copies are and why people should use those?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a couple different workflows. I personally used to do save as commands in Photoshop all the time. So by the time I was done editing an image, I had like 9 different versions of the file. Each one is kind of a bookmark for that specific point in time where I said, oh, I like this look, let me keep going. And so you can use virtual copies for that. So you can have a first pass at it, like, okay, it's a good starting point. Let me save that as a copy. Let's try for the same image. Let's try a really saturated version. Then you have all these different versions, these different copies of the image without having to duplicate them on disk. So you can always come back to them and, you know, play around and not have to take up the extra disk space. I think for pros, it's a great selling tool because they can try different crops, different black and white conversions, color conversions for the same image, and have them all up at the same time and show them to the customer without having to flip back and forth different layers in Photoshop or open up different files.
And the beauty is you're not making a copy of the original RAW image, so you're not eating up extra disk space there. And all the settings, adjustments, and presets that you apply are simply a set of instructions to Lightroom on how to get somewhere. And so that doesn't take up virtually hardly any disk space at all. So this is a great way of having multiple variations of a single image without the cost of those images on disk.
Absolutely. And we tried two different ways of providing that functionality. One is virtual copies. A little less known solution is snapshots. You can see those on the left-hand side of the develop module in Lightroom. And that way, you're not creating different versions of the file that you can see in your library or in your output. You're just different points in time, say little snapshots in time of what the image looked like. And that's another neat tool, so you can save a point in time without having to duplicate the file.
Well, that's a great point, because I know I've kind of gone through a process and then went, you know, I kind of liked it 5 steps ago. And you can go through the history and take those steps out, but it's also easier just to create some snapshots of really nice points that you got so you could go back and switch through those and see which one you kind of liked better. So
yep.
That's definitely another unused or little used feature that a lot of people should really get to be more familiar with.
That's a nice that's what I like about Lightroom. There's a lot of power there, but if you don't want to use it, you don't need to use it. It, you know, doesn't get in the way. We really want to keep the experience clean and, you know, just what you need when you need it. And so I, you know, we really are focused on, you know, the usability, the experience, you know, making sure the learning curve for the application isn't that high. That's really important to us, because, you know, to enjoy photography is not about learning how to use software. It's about taking images and then kind of, you know, having them come out the way you want them or way that you pre-visualize those images.
Right.
I really like that point that you're mentioning about the learning curve, and, you know, you don't want to take a ton of time about learning software. We're supposed to be out there shooting. That's our primary, you know, focus. And I was wondering, like, what are some of the common mistakes or hiccups, you know, things that people should, I guess you would say, look for in order to avoid, so they can keep that learning curve shorter when they're taking on Lightroom and discovering all of the features, the advantages and the benefits of using such a very powerful tool in their workflow?
Well, you know, that's interesting. It's something we're talking about internally. You know, and my first recommendation to folks just getting started and with Lightroom is just to not get too wrapped up in the catalogs or tagging your images. Just pick a nice way of organizing your images. You know, set that up in the import module, and let it just happen from there. And don't worry about that. Focus on editing your images, creating output. Don't get bogged down in that first library module. Go ahead and spend more time with your images at first. Start sharing them, and then as you build up a collection, then go back and revisit the library and kind of see what it has to offer. Because the more images you have, the more power the library provides. So when you're just getting started, go ahead and skip right by it and go to the develop module and spend some time editing your images.
Cool. Yep. Cool. Thanks.
People can download a trial version, right?
Absolutely. There's a 30-day trial on Adobe.com.
Oh, if you're, you know, you're interested and you haven't, for some unknown reason, you haven't picked up Lightroom yet, go pick up the demo and check out some of the tutorials we have on CameraDojo.com. And I think you'll really get into it once you know, see really the power that's there. And, you know, it's not going to be everything, because you can't really take too many features away from Photoshop or InDesign or Premiere and shove them all together. It has to have a finite set of features at some point, right?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, we're just going to keep building what photographers ask for with a degree of restraint. And that's
a nice way of putting it.
That's where the complexity comes in. But we have no boundaries. We just want to build a tool that makes photographers happy and just, you know, makes their lives easier and helps them enjoy photography more. More like it was back in the film days, when you can throw, you know, a box of chromes on a light table and kind of have a nice period of time looking through your images and deciding how do you want to print those.
Did anybody really understand when Lightroom was getting ready to come out how dramatically it was going to change the way people work?
I think so. One of the little backstories to the development of Lightroom. It's been in development for it was in development for 4 years before we actually released that first public beta. Was, you know, asking, you know, some of the original engineers who created Photoshop to take a step back. You know, this is now 15, 16 years after Photoshop was created, and say, what would you do differently if you could start all over? And knowing that digital photography has emerged as it is right now, how would you recreate Photoshop from the ground up for photographers? So it was, you know, it was a significant task, and it was, you know, an important task, I think, for Adobe and the Photoshop family. Because now what we can do is we can, you know, remove that burden from Photoshop of having to do a basic tonal adjustment. You shouldn't need to go into Photoshop to do basic dodging and burning. And now Photoshop can focus on what it does best, which is really the detailed manipulation and the, you know, the compositing and the advanced image processing like HDR and panorama stitching. So I think we did have some sense that, you know, this is a really important step for the Photoshop family.
And it was such a huge departure in terms of user interface.
Well, that was part of it. You know, the goal was to kind of free ourselves from the paradigm, I hate people use that word, free ourselves from the existing model, because we saw flaws in the palette, in the palettes that are used in all the Creative Suite applications. I think you constantly watch photographers get confused about where they left that palette, as it just, you know, swings around the desktop as you use it. And so we, you know, more fixed windows, a modular interface to give you the right tools at the right time. And it's interesting, you start to see Photoshop catch up. Their panels in CS4 were a little bit more fixed. They have different workspaces that kind of change your tool set based on what you're doing. So it was very intentional that we broke from the mold in order to try and innovate. And again, it was really about reducing the learning curve.
What I'm wondering as well is, now I know that we've got some tutorials on our website, but what are some additional resources that Adobe may have available to our listeners that could help them to learn the particular program? What are some things that you might suggest that they take a look at, either in print or online?
Well, the first step, online, I would say, is adobetv.com. It's all one word, adobetv.com. We have a number of videos up there. They're all free. They're done by, you know, our product evangelist, Julian Cost, and others. So they're really well done, a great starting point to kind of learn the application. In terms of other resources, I was trying to tally up the number of Lightroom 2 books that are out there. It's well over a dozen. Every kind of book to suit your need, which is great. And then there's great blogs. I strongly recommend LightroomKillerTips.com, which is produced by NAPP. Matt Kluskowski does a great job on that one. I get so many updates every day from all these different blogs that are providing tips and tricks. There's quite a bit out there.
I have an interesting product question here. Is why is Lightroom not included in the CS4 Master Collection?
Ooh,
that is actually not an uncommon question. One of the reasons is, you know, we are we did start off as a seed project that was designed to kind of break the mold and try some new things in terms of interface and usability and really try and tackle different problems. And so one of the things we as a product team needed was the flexibility to release updates whenever we needed to kind of live outside of the larger Creative Suite so that there wasn't this need to conform to that experience. So we've done things very differently in terms of interface, in terms of release schedules. We do far more updates than traditional suite products. And you know, if you look at our licensing programs, we do cross-platform licenses as well as multi-language licenses, so as well as multi-platform licensing. So when you buy the box, you get Mac and Windows. So we did a lot of things differently and kind of shoehorning kind of new product into an existing collection can kind of mute or dampen some of those things that you're trying to do to experiment and change things for the better for the customer. So we need that separation from the suite for flexibility.
Interesting.
There's a lot more to it. There are also internal hurdles in terms of logistics because the suite is, especially the Master Collection, is an incredible collection of products. And once you're involved in that collection, it puts a lot of overhead on the team at a time when we're trying to be, you know, as innovative as possible.
Right, which also keeps you out from being, you know, bitched at for how bad their installer is. So there's a plus there, right?
No comment.
I'd throw that in there and can't really hit you on the shins for that one.
That's just it. I mean, we hold ourselves up an example of how good an installation process can be and how easy an update can be. And I think it's important to have that flexibility.
Right. Now, of course, the standard official line is you don't talk about features until they come out. And so a lot of the things that people are still asking me about are feature requests. And again, I'm not going to ask because I know I'm going to get the stock answer, right? So.
Yeah, I do, you know, one time I got out and I talked a lot about some new features we were working on. And you know, it's just better to talk about it when you can show it and customers can experience it. Because until then, it's all talk. And I think we're a little bit more substantive than that. We want to get the features out and let people talk about them once they're there instead of speculating about the future. I find it to be, and it also gives us a more productive conversation, so we can hear all different points of view without us telling you what's going to be there in a year. And people saying, well, okay, then we don't need to talk about anything anymore. We don't need to talk about advances in video. We don't need to talk about all these other things. So I feel like it keeps a more open dialogue.
Yeah, and things change. Schedules change. If something, you know, doesn't quite happen or it doesn't make a release and people get disappointed, and if you wait until it comes out, then we all have a nice, pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I've seen that happen with other software companies. I can't think of that one example, the software that was delayed many times.
Yeah. But it's definitely coming along. I mean, Lightroom 2.2 is, you know, it's significantly better than the 1.0 version, and it's a nice upgrade from the 2.0 version with some of the new improvements to it.
Well, and there's more on the way. I will say that Lightroom 2.3 does address, because there will be a 2.3, does address some performance issues even further in the localized correction area. So we're looking forward to getting that out the door too.
Because that's really the big kicker, is the local adjustment tool. Just once in a while, it just, no, I'm not gonna make you happy today. And it just develops a mind of its own and starts drawing things and, like, okay, time to restart this one, and then the next time it may be fine. It just, yeah, it's a little odd sometimes.
That, yeah, we're pushing hard in that area,
but it's doing a lot of stuff. So what I find to really make a big difference is I just use the overlay mode all the time, and I find I can draw much better with that. And it's more like drawing in a mask if you're used to Photoshop masks. And then when I'm done, I hit O again, and it turns it off, and now I can see the effect of it. That seems to work really well for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a. I do that when I'm doing more detailed work.
Is there any favorite feature of Lightroom of yours that we haven't talked about?
Yeah.
You know, graduated filter we did cover. That has to be my favorite, because it's not just about, you know, pulling in the skyline. It's, you know, it can really create a nice dramatic effect, pulling it from the side of the image and maybe kind of darkening a you know, one half, and kind of, it really helps me focus the light in a quick and easy way. You know, I don't even have to pick up a brush. I just drag the line and I use it for brightness or exposure, graduated filters. And it's that to me has a lot of power and a lot of, really quickly.
That is a good one. And bad host for not bringing that one up, because that's one of my favorite features as well. Mostly when I'm doing landscapes, because I can very quickly, you know, emulate a split filter and darken the sky or lighten the ground, and I come up with really good exposures. Or I can, you know, throw it, even if there's a person in the middle of that, I can still draw it in and then use the local adjustment brush to kind of erase the effect of that. So you can do a combination of these different tools to get the effect that you want.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I was trying to think of my other favorites. All the filters in the library, I use those quite often. what was that image I shot with the, you know, I borrowed a buddy's F1.2 lens, and I need to find it. I just kind of open up that filter, and that works really well for me.
That's another thing we should mention, is the Lightroom Journal blog that people should go and check out on a regular basis.
Oh, I highly recommend it. It's been a little dry. I've been using it just to get across key pieces of information about timing and releases and what we've changed and what we've fixed. But we have a new evangelist who's helping us out, Jeff Tranberry, and he's starting to populate the blog for us, which is great to have him on board and help him out. So expect to see that Lightroom Journal blog get a little bit more activity coming up.
That's excellent. I mean, because you certainly don't blog as much as John Knack does. He's a maniac.
Is that possible? I would need minions running around writing blog fodder all the time. It's great. I rely on John's blog quite a bit. If you don't have that on your list or an RSS feed, highly recommend it. He's just a wealth of information. I don't know how he does it.
Well, he has minions, right?
Yeah, I guess
so. And the Lightroom group is too small to have minions yet.
This is true, although we sit on the same floor, so I should be able to go borrow some.
Maybe you could borrow his minions once in a while?
I could try.
Some shared minion power? Well, that's always good, right? I mean, I'd be happy to be a minion for you. So, I mean, it's all there. But we'll make sure we put the Lightroom blog in the show notes as well as John's, because it is, there's always good information in John's blog, and he always posts when there's Lightroom updates as well. So there's good information. There's a lot of other blogs available at Adobe, and you can get to most of those at blogs.adobe.com and find a bunch of different people who are blogging on all the different products that are out there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's something we realized, you know, several years ago. And now that we have this technology, we have to use it to have an open dialogue with our customers because, you know, you need to be able to hear when there's a pain point or something. I don't know if you guys saw the DearAdobe.com site, but it's a pretty direct, pretty refreshing evaluation of what customers would write us letters about if it were simple and straightforward. And it's all aggregated into this one site called DearAdobe.com, and you know it's something all the product teams have been responding to and getting out on that blog and talking to the customers. So it's great to have this have the vehicle to have that conversation.
That's fantastic. It's really good to hear that Adobe is active in listening to its users, and I think how you guys have handled the beta programs for Photoshop and Lightroom have really been a testament to that. To get stuff out there and see what people want in terms of those features, how they're using them, and then integrate that feedback into the final product.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while, and to be able to do that with Lightroom 1, I thought was critical to getting a solid 1.0 product out the door, and happy to say it worked.
I'd say it worked pretty well. I mean, it got a lot of people using it before it came out, and then you did the same with the 2.0, and I know I jumped on it immediately, and I was like, oh, please don't time out before this thing comes out. I'll be hosed, because I was starting to do all my work in it because of the newer tools that were available.
Yeah, I did find it a little bit amusing that some folks were concerned that we would actually leave them stranded without a version 2 having the beta expire before we shipped. We would never do that.
No, I was thinking, well, I'm sure they'll come out with another version if they're not ready to push out the final in time. But it all came together, and it's been a great product. And we use it. I mean, I had to drag David kicking and screaming into using it. But once he did, you know, his workflow improved dramatically.
Yeah, David, what was the story on the kicking and screaming? Why was that required?
I think it all happened almost at the same time as me flipping from JPEG to RAW as well. And when I sat down one evening with Carrie and we were going over just the different features about Lightroom and, you know, just the differences between JPEG and RAW. And my big thing was that I had heard, you know, and through the grapevine that Lightroom was going to be extremely similar to Aperture, and I was not a fan of Aperture. And we sat down one night and literally I was just like, that's it? Like, I already know how to do Photoshop. I know everything about Photoshop. Well, not everything, but I know enough to, you know, a working knowledge. And boom, that happened. And almost simultaneously was the same transition point when I went from JPEG to RAW. And my photo quality, the workflow, I went from having a spreadsheet of have all these different steps that I would require myself to do to my photos to get them to the level that I thought that would be appropriate for my clients to, I'm doing it all in Lightroom at such a faster pace. You know, to be able to pick and delete the photographs when I sift through them is just a big time saver right there. So, yeah, I have Carrie to thank for that.
Excellent. Excellent.
Glad I could be of service.
Oh, yes.
But it was. I mean, I was a big fan of jumping into RAW very early on because of the program RAW Workflow, and it was tremendous. I'm like, what do you mean really awful workflow? It's good. It works. I mean, it's great. Look how good my stuff is. And then Lightroom just, you know, totally took it to another level and continues to do so. So we're really looking forward to seeing what you guys come out with in 2.3, 2.4, 2.5, 3.0, whenever that comes out. And I'm sure that'll have all the features that we all want and that everyone keeps asking me about and that you won't say are coming or not. So, right?
Right.
Well, I'll just keep pinging my buddy Rick over there and say, hey, make sure you get this on the list. Make sure this gets on the list.
Yeah, I get tons of notes from Rick, and also there's that feature request form, which we'll get the link up on the site. So that'd be great.
Yeah, not as good as an inside nudge every once in a while, I don't think. But hey, you know, it whatever works, right?
Very true.
Well, Tom, it's been an hour. I don't want to go too much longer and take up any more of your time. I really appreciate you coming on and giving us the insight into Lightroom and to, you know, how people should work with catalogs and collections. I think that's going to be really important for people. Is there anything else that before we go that you would like to just share with our listeners real quick?
Well, as always, in the five rules of Lightroom, if you go to the help menu, you can step through and get to rule number five, which is just enjoy. Have fun. Have fun shooting.
And, you know, if you haven't bought it already, go get the download, the trial version. That's a 30-day demo?
Yep, 30 days.
You got a month, so wait till you have a big job and then download it and use it. And I think you'll really find that it can really streamline your workflow as well as your ability to do cataloging and organization of your stuff. I would probably like to have you on or someone else on for another show to talk specifically about DNG, because that's a big issue. But I think that's a really big topic in and of itself.
Well, I'm your guy. I'm also the DNG product manager, so let me know whenever you want to have that conversation.
Well, that would be a good choice to have you back on then for that, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Because I know Rick has pounded me about switching to DNG, and I've been playing around with it, but with Canon, I don't get the compression ratio that, you know, like Nikon and Fuji get. So it's like a 10% savings, but that's only a small part of why you would want to use DNG. But we'll take that up into a whole other conversation, and we've had a bunch of really long podcasts lately, so I'm trying to keep this shorter and not have people sitting in their cars for hours listening to podcasts like people have said they have done. So I don't want to go too much longer. So, Tom, again, thank you very much for being on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Kerry. Thank you, David.
We are back from our conversation with Tom Hogarty. I hope everyone got something out of that. I know I use Lightroom in a particular way. I'm a big fan of the single catalog with multiple collections. And David, you've been doing multiple
folders,
catalogs.
Yeah, or catalogs. Yeah, well, I call
and
them folders.
So
yeah.
It's like every, you know, you got to really figure out what the best method is for yourself and see what's really going to work for you. So I think this was good, and hopefully everyone got something out of it.
I think so. I mean, it's not a situation anymore for me where I was sitting around going, well, maybe I should do it the way Kerry does it, but it doesn't work for me because I tried putting all my work together the way you have yours, and I'm like, no, because when I'm done, it's done. And like, delete, I just take it right out of Lightroom. I don't want to have it in there. I want it nice and clean. I don't want to have to sort through a bunch of junk. And talking to him, it just pretty much said, hey, it's okay to be different.
It is. I mean, it's okay to do it any way you want. I'm still a big fan because I use that so that I can go back and create sample albums so that I can change my gallery up. So I can, you know, I have access to all those files, and that's the way it is. Now, yeah, it's not for everybody. You know, if as you work, you're always throwing images into a folder somewhere of ones that you want to keep, great, fine.
Yeah.
Whatever works, you know, everyone's going to do something different.
Right.
Me, I'm a constant tweaker, especially because I make the Lightroom presets. So, you know, I'm always going back and trying to find a previous image that I can test with different presets that I'm working on. I've got the, you know, the Dojo wedding tools. I've got the Dojo power tools, and I'm also working on a Dojo landscape tools. And so I'm always now going back and finding different landscape images that I can try the things on to see if the settings work across all kinds of different images. No, that works for me.
And you're a constant tweaker.
I'm a tweaker. Yeah.
It just doesn't sound right.
You're that's
just
like, okay. At least I don't wear elf boots.
Oh, I know, man. You got to tell your daughter to quit wearing those elf boots, dude.
If it was only my daughter, unfortunately, it's you. It's my co-host.
Whatever.
If you've never seen David's elf boots, I don't have any pictures, I don't think. But if I do, no. I'll find some and put them online.
I'm so sorry, everybody. That's no, it's not true. It's not true. He's just jealous that I am a fashionista and he is not. So there.
Well, if you call articles of clothing that you'd expect to find on people living in trees making cookies, then you call that what you will.
Anyhow.
All righty. Well, let's close this up. It's been a little over an hour. And
gosh.
Oh, I hope people like the new logo and mascot, OG.
OG. Okay, start that over. Edit. It sucked, man.
Okay. Well, if you've noticed, while we were at WPPI, we launched a new logo. And, well, there was actually a new theme that came out a week before at getting ready for the new logo. The new logo came out along with a new mascot for the website. And for lack of a better name right now, we are calling him OG. If you have a better name, please tell us, because we couldn't think of a name. So he's being called OG right now. And he's kind of cool. And you've seen him in different places around the site. He was carrying a suitcase to WPPI. He's listening to headphones for some podcasts. And he's got a camera for the main logo. So we're going to
T-shirts.
He was on our T-shirts that we had out at WPPI when I was tending bar for one of the parties. So, but yeah, I'm very happy with the new logo and the mascot. So, if you have comments on that, we'd really like to hear from that. You know, post something in the forums or send us a message on Twitter or you know something else, and let us know what you think of the new logo and OG.
Exactly, OG.
So
OG.
No, not OG. Just OG.
But, yeah, but I like to call him OG, like original gangster. Like,
no, you know, I don't want anyone to know that that's how we spell it.
I was just, you were saying OG. I was just saying OG.
Yeah, OG. Like O-G.
O-G.
Like O-G, exactly. O-H.
Whatever.
That's kind of that Asian martial arts feel to it.
Say that. You're going to offend people.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm going to edit that. You see what I'm saying? We're just calling him OG.
Rizzle, stop listening to us.
And then if someone writes it and says, oh, I really like OG, and they spell it O-G-I-E, we're like, no, OG. Orange guy. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Back.
So make sure you come to CameraDojo.com, check out the forums, leave comments. We really love the feedback you give us. And David, what should they do for us on iTunes?
Listen to us, download us, subscribe to us, share your thoughts, your comments, your vision, what you would like to hear from us, questions you may have, people you'd like to hear from on the particular program that we happen to be doing on iTunes, otherwise known as Camera Dojo, guests that you'd like to hear, pretty much anything. This show is dedicated to you. And in fact, I know we're getting ready to do a letters from listeners program because they have been piling up. We've got a lot of really great questions and comments that I think should be shared with everybody out there because some of them were just kind of like, never thought of it that way.
Yeah, there's some interesting questions that have come in and we have some interesting responses.
Like, too bad.
none of that. We do want to thank everyone who found us. We do want to thank everyone who found us at WPPI and said hi. We really appreciate getting to know the listeners face to face and putting names to faces and all that good stuff. So make sure you go to iTunes, leave us a review. That really helps us get noticed out there. We really appreciate that. You guys have been awesome in giving us a bunch of 5-star reviews lately. I can't thank you enough. That is really, really cool of you guys.
I want to send a huge shout out to Colorado to Carl over at Mountain High Photo. Thanks. That was so cool and made our day, that day that you came up to us when we were sitting in the audience for David Zeiser. I didn't even hear my iPhone going off when you were tweeting me, and then all of a sudden you just showed up and you're like, David, Carrie, dude, that was so cool.
Not that we weren't a little freaked out that somebody recognized us.
You were freaked out. I was just taking. No, just kidding. No, it was really cool, and it was pretty surreal. But that was neat that you took the effort to look us up there, and we were able to get a couple pictures with you. So that was
neat too. How do we know he's not a stalker?
I know you have a lot of stalkers, dude. I've seen writing on the walls.
Anyway, so David, where can they find all your stuff?
You can find me online at esquirephotography.com. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/esquirephotography. No, Esquire Photo, excuse me. I'm also on Facebook and pretty much just about every other virtual medium that's out there. And Carrie, where can we find you?
You can find me, of course, at cameradojo.com. And there's links right there to the Camera Dojo Facebook fan page. We're going to be trying something new with a thing called networked blogs. We're going to see how that goes. And me, you can find me at carriegarrison.com. There's a link on cameradojo.com to my website and twitter.com/carriegarrison. And also, if you're on Twitter, if you are tweeting, if you have tweeps, get on, follow Camera Dojo on there at twitter.com/cameradojo. Because we post not only updates to cameradojo.com, we have specials from other vendors that we post on a regular basis, other really cool photography links that come up get posted to that. So it's just a good way of seeing not just Camera Dojo stuff, but other stuff as well. So check us out there as well. And I believe next week the plan is to have Roberto back on so we can finish our Converging Lines contest. We have a ton of entries. I don't know how we're going to sort through these.
Oh, and I've got a couple from the one of the engagement shoots that we did in Vegas that I want to submit. The ones that were in the hallway that look like we're in like a cathedral. That just, wow, I totally can't.
Are you allowed
to
enter?
Oh, man.
I don't know. Oh, I should.
Dude.
I don't know. I'm going to be a little biased in my opinion.
Okay, okay, everybody out there, let us know. Can Carrie and I enter into the program? I didn't even think about that. I'd really like to get Roberto's feedback on it.
Yeah, I mean, but we can definitely discuss some of those. And, but there's some really great images that have been submitted. Yeah. Just some wonderful work. You guys have just really blown us away on this one. And we have a handful of new contests coming up. But most importantly, how would somebody, and I know this is a silly question, would somebody like to win a copy of Lightroom? You think anybody might be interested in that?
No.
Because
nobody ever wanted anything like that.
We are going to give one away.
Whatever.
Adobe was really gracious and said, hey, why don't you do something to give away a copy of Lightroom? So I think we should. What do you think?
I think we should too. But you know what? Why don't we have a contest to come up with a contest to give away the copy of Adobe Lightroom? How about that?
How about coming up with a name for OG?
Okay, let's do that. Yes,
okay.
Everybody wants
but
to do that.
What we normally do is some kind of scavenger hunt on the product page. So you can figure out, it makes you go to the page. And that's what it's about, and figuring it out. So the last one, I got to admit, was a little tricky. The one for the On1 software, it was a little obscure. You had to click around and find that one. So this one I'm going to make really easy, okay? All you have to do is go to Adobe.com, go to the Adobe Photoshop Lightroom 2 page, and there is a tagline there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words, okay? And I'm going to even make it really simple. It's simplify photography from fill in the blank to fill in the blank. How's that? Is that clear enough?
I think that's pretty darn clear, as long as Adobe doesn't change their website.
As long as they don't change it, we'll be good. And we are going to run this contest until
Easter.
When the hell is that?
I don't know.
Thanks. Good job.
I know.
Third.
Easter is the 5th this year?
10th, 17th.
We're
going to do this until March 20th.
Friday, March 20th, really?
Yeah. How's that?
That's perfect, because then that'll be before I leave for Hawaii.
Okay. So, You have until March 20th. Here's the directions. You don't mess this up or you'll be disqualified. People have been disqualified for contests for not following directions. It's really simple. You're going to send an email to
info@cameradojo.com, podcast@cameradojo.com, contest@cameradojo.com.
There you go. In order to...
Dude, somebody needs sleep. You need a monster drink. Okay.
Take three. In order to qualify to win Adobe Photoshop Lightroom 2, you need to find the tagline that we've given you all these clues for, and you're going to send an email to contest@cameradojo.com. In the subject of the email, you're going to put Lightroom Contest. In the body of the email, you're going to put the entire tagline as we've helped you find it. And how about this? Your name. We want to know your name. And if you have a Twitter account, your Twitter name as well, because we will announce this first on Twitter on Friday the 20th, probably in the afternoon sometime. We'll have a countdown, and you're going to be paying attention to it. So send us to contest@cameradojo.com, subject Lightroom Contest, the Simplify Photography from fill in the blank to fill in the blank, with your name, and if you have a Twitter name, that as well. And that's how we will draw the winner. Sound exciting?
I think that's dope.
I wish they would have given me a free copy.
It's embracing new technology.
Yeah. Well, someone else is going to get a free copy, but not me. But that's cool. I mean, I'm happy to do this for some lucky listener out there.
It's very cool.
So stay tuned. We have a bunch of cool podcasts coming up over the next few weeks. There's going to be a bunch of stuff coming out on PMA and what's going on out there. The photo contest. We have a new contest starting up as soon as this one ends. So we've got all kinds of cool stuff going on. We have some great tutorials coming up, some articles on how to use the Lens Baby Composer. I've been playing with the different macro lenses and the wide angle lenses. So if you're into that at all, you may get a kick out of that. We have some lighting stuff coming up. It's just going to be an exciting time. So lots of stuff coming, and we are going to let you go, and we will catch you next week.